Nola and Gary. Today is the last in a series of talks about the five principles of unity, the way the teachings are condensed so that we can kind of understand them in a nutshell. And these are phrased in different ways at different times. And on your bulletin is a more recent phrasing that is on the Unity website now. And in other times and other places, they've been worded a little bit differently. But they are essentially are the same anyway. And I learned actually from a YOU person here, that one way to remember what these principles are is one clap. Okay, and the first one is one. There is one presence and one power in the universe. God, omnipotence, omniscience, our source, our creator. That's the one. Okay. Clap. C-L-A-P. The second principle can be summarized as the Christ Spirit within. So we are created in God's image, and the Spirit of God is within us, and we often call that the Christ, which means the anointed one, and which is indicative that we are all divine. That is the divinity within us. That is the point that actually separates us the most, perhaps, from a lot of other, from more traditional Christian denominations. Because we say that we have the potential within us to do just as Jesus the Christ did. And actually, he told us that in the Bible. But of course, that's a matter of interpretation sometimes. Okay. And principle number three, L, the law of mind action, which is one of the two that I am focusing on today. And that is a spiritual law. It is sometimes called the law of attraction, the law of compensation, the law of cause and effect, the secret, many other names. But generally, traditionally in Unity, it has been expressed as thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. And it can also be stated as, we create our life expectancy, or our life experiences, through our way of thinking. We create our life experiences through our way of thinking. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. And the fourth principle is the A in CLAP. There is power in affirmative prayers, affirmative prayer and meditation, stating what is already true in spirit rather than asking for something we don't have. This is affirmative prayer. In Enola's story song this morning, the refrain was an affirmative prayer. And anytime we speak in such a way, we are practicing the third principle, which I just spoke of, the law of mind action, because we are saying something that is positive and that is true of us on a spiritual level. And the more we say and assimilate those ideas, the more we know it, and then we continue to step five, principle number five, which is practicing these principles in our lives, putting them into effect in our lives. So they all tie together, and they all help us move towards what is probably our greatest purpose in this existence, which is expressing more of God, expressing more of the divinity in our lives, which does take a lot of practice, at least it seems it to me. And that's what we do. That's what we're doing as we live. We're practicing, you know. And sometimes we practice things that go against our own best interests, probably. But that's part of the practice. That's just the way it is. Now, the law of mind action can be taught as a really simple thing in general. And it's more easy. I think it's more easily comprehended in that sense. Like I can definitely accept and attest to from experience that if I say and bring feeling into myself in a very positive way, my experience is more positive. And if I am bummed out, depressed, resentful, whatever, I create through my words a feeling. And this is not just in spirit, it's in emotion, and it's in my body. You know, I can feel it, that I change. If I am resentful, I change my experience in my body. And science has shown that we have different hormones, and, you know, our body does react differently to different levels of thought, be it positive or negative. So this, in a simple way, I understand that. But I have to say that as far as really practicing the law in all my affairs or all my business, I'm a student, you know. I don't understand it totally. And there are people in this congregation who I think have a clearer perception of it than I. But I have lots of questions, but that's okay, because I am a student on the path, and I learn as I go, as we all do, and I might not be one who just readily accepts things. I have to really think about it and read about it and pray about it and meditate about it and learn more as I go. So I have the intention of understanding this law more readily in all its ramifications in this lifetime, and I'm making progress in that direction. But I still have a lot of questions. For example, if everything that I experience comes from my own consciousness, then if I do get sick, then there's that tendency to question, well, if this came from my consciousness, what was that about? And I don't know, because I do think there are so many things, there are other people's consciousness that we bump up against all the time. And there is what is called a mass consciousness, or our co-founder Charles Fillmore said a race consciousness, but he meant human race when he said it. And so those are the collective unconscious beliefs we have in our culture. So there are so many things. And if we have past lives, which makes as much sense to me as anything else, then there would be those experiences as well. So to me, it doesn't seem as simple as it does, as I think some people see it. And so I question, how can all these things, if they're all influences, then how can it all be from my thoughts? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's okay to ask the question. And in Unity, most people will just teach the law of mind action without asking questions. But there are a few who do ask questions, and I like that. And one of them is Paul Hasselbeck. And I've been teaching a class based on his book, Point of Power. And he says that he believes this law on the level of spirit, that it works 100%, but he doesn't get it either in terms always of every single thing in our lives. He said, well, when Jesus was on the cross, was it because of his consciousness? Good question. Or was it also because of the consciousness of all those people around him? And of course, we do acknowledge that Jesus probably knew exactly what he's doing and was accepting something in order to achieve a higher goal. But it's still a good question, you know. And he says, if everything we say and do has an effect on our experience, then when something happens, how come people respond in different ways? And that's another good question. We don't all respond in the same way or get the same lesson. And if disease is caused by our thoughts, how come a lot of the teachers who've taught that end up getting sick and, of course, dying? So I don't know the answers to those. I bring them up just because I think they're worthy questions. And I think if we do examine our beliefs, then we need to examine the teachings and see how we can best understand them and express them through us. But obviously, there is truth to this law, because it's in not just in Unity, it's been in mystical teachings from the beginning of recorded spiritual teachings. You know, it has existed. and been known for a long, long time. So it didn't just get made up for the movie The Secret, you know. And that was just a way to present the idea in a slick, packaged manner, but so that more people would get exposed to that idea. Because the more people get exposed to new ideas, eventually the idea gets more accepted in a culture. And that has happened with so many issues in our culture that we're thought of as way far out. Even like 20 years ago, 10 years ago, look at 30 years ago, smoking was an accepted thing, you know, in many places, for example. And that really shifted, that changed. And of late, we've seen finally more increase in the rights for gay people and equal rights, which, of course, we know is what the way it needs to be, but it's taken a long time and it's not there yet. But the more people get that into their consciousness, the more it shifts to become mainstream. And it's true with many other things. So also with this law, I think the more people that get exposed to it, the more we'll acknowledge that there's truth in it and explore it, as I am, whether they understand it totally or not. But Paul Hasselbeck also tells a couple of stories about his belief and yet his questions as well about this law. And in one of them, the minister is teaching about the law of mind action, and there's a young guy on the front row, and he gets really nervous, and he kind of starts getting really antsy. And after the talk, the minister says to him, "Hey, what's wrong? Did I say something that upset you?" And he said, "Well, you said that we think what we think about, we become, and all I can think about is girls." So, I didn't make the story up, but I'm just the messenger. Okay. And also, Paul Hasselbeck says, you know, there's this beautiful African-American singer, female singer in my church, and no matter how hard I visualize, I am never going to become a beautiful African-American female singer. No matter how many treasure maps I put on the wall. So, just more questions. But there is truth. And one thing that helps me understand a little bit, Imelda Shanklin, who wrote What Am I? Or What Are You? She talks, as do other Unity teachers, about levels such as the personal and impersonal. So the impersonal is like spirit. It's the absolute. And it's invisible to our human eye. But things happen in that realm that we may or may not, probably are not aware of in spirit. And then there is the personal, which is the physical level, the level of ego that we know and that many of us, that most people in Western culture think is everything. Because we think, well, if I can't see it, then it doesn't exist. So, so things happen on the level of impersonal or spirit that we, most of us, are not at least yet able to perceive on the level of ego or physical. So when our thoughts create, they may or may not actually manifest in the physical. They certainly may, but as Paul was saying, not everything I visualize is going to manifest in the physical necessarily. But what I think about over time and put feeling and energy to definitely affects my life, absolutely. Affects my body, you know, affects me on all levels, and that is true for all of us. Even if we don't believe in that law or we have questions about that law, it does happen. It does affect us. And one writer that I've known, Raphael Kushner, wrote a book called, I forgot his name, the name of his book, but it's downstairs. Anyway, he talks about how everything we do is either expansion or contraction. Some people say it's yes or no, but he uses it this way, so which shows that it's in the physical as well as the mental, as well as the spiritual. Opening up, expanding, allowing. That gives us opportunities that we become aware of. They're in our consciousness. That changes our lives. Whereas contracting, going, not meditating, but holding our energy tight so that we won't get hurt or we won't encounter things we don't like, that contracts our experience. That makes our experience smaller or our possibilities smaller because we're just not open. Like Gary sang a beautiful song before the service about the open hand, you know, and accepting God and accepting Spirit in the open hand. And that's right. The open hand, the open mind, the open heart, all of this affects our experience. Now, we know that this doesn't always have to make sense to us, but some people would think of it as being logical or reasonable, and after all, unity was called from the beginning practical Christianity. But I read that one spiritual unseeker, non-seeker, Bill Maher, made a comment about the rationality. He said, "Religion has always been reasonable, ever since two naked people took advice from a snake." So, there's one view. Yeah, there's one view that we can add to the mix. You know, it's good to have a mix of views, I think. There are a number of books that I've been reading as I thought about this topic, and I recommend them. I mentioned Point of Power, and they're all in, either in the bookstore or I can order them. Anything by Eric Butterworth, because he clearly expresses unity teachings in all of his works. Our classic book, Lessons in Truth, Emily Cady, and this one, which is really great and has been mentioned before, The Five Principles by Ellen Davenport, really goes into each of these in a very clear way and gives practical examples and questions and answers questions. Very good. And Ellen was actually our youth ed director for a few months when we were in North Lawrence, and Sherry Schultz was our minister. And she went on to become a minister herself. Well, she was a student anyway then. But she also talks in her book about something that many people who like to live a spiritual life say, oh, don't watch the news. And that's a personal choice. Okay. Now, Ellen has a background in journalism. She was a reporter. So she has a little different take on that. And she says, use your principles as you watch the news. You know, use affirmative prayer. You don't have to watch everything, but know that the news is about what's not typical anyway, or it wouldn't be news. So it's not the most common experiences that we earthlings share, or it wouldn't be on TV. And a lot of it is very negative. But use it to practice blessing people and affirming divine order in spite of appearances. So that's just another view of that, because she, as a journalist, believes that it's important to stay informed, but to practice our principles with that information rather than allowing it to depress us or make us angry. But it gives us an opportunity to look at the world through the eyes of a truth student, which is what we are. Another book that's really going wild these days is our own Pam Grout's book, E-Squared. This book is selling really well through Hay House. So, yes? New York Times bestseller list. I think it might be number one from Hay House. I think I read something that Louise Hay said that. So Pam has gotten endorsements from Louise Hay and Dyer, Wayne Dyer, who people call Wayne Dwyer, but his name's Dyer. I'm Dwyer. He's not my cousin or anything, but so. But she's getting a lot of endorsements, and this is 9 experiments to do about proving that your thoughts create your reality. And it's fun, and insightful and practical. So I encourage you to look at that as well. So even though we can't get everything from books, they're still a springboard for our understanding. And then in the end, we have to go within and meditate and listen to that voice within to discover what we really believe and what works for us. But books are useful, even though Eric Butterworth talks about sometimes truth students are overread, you know, and underpracticed. But some of us do get that way. One more workshop, and then I'm going to quit. Just one more. So, but it doesn't hurt us, but we also need to look within, because that's what the mystic does, and we are in the tradition of the mystic as well. So the law of mind action is very central to our beliefs, indeed, and David talked last week, Reverend David talked about affirmative prayer and meditation, the fourth principle, and now I'm also going to talk about the fifth, although they're not really separate. They all blend together to make a whole. One leads to another. You know, as we gain greater understanding in one, we then gain greater understanding in another. So the last one about living the principles, definitely, you know, you have to comprehend the first four before you can really consciously do that. So that one is practicing the principles. And we do that by affirmative prayer. That's number one. That's how we practice affirmative prayer. By watching our thoughts, listening to our own voice, paying attention to what's inside, using our perceptions, building our intuition, and then acting on it. Those are all ways that we practice the principles. And bless you. And we also have some tools that we can use. And one of those that I want to talk about next is a tool for practicing the principles. And it's called the Golden Key. And there is a little booklet that has been popular for many, many years. I have a few downstairs, and it may be going out of print because I've been having trouble finding them. But the Golden Key. And it is a process of seeing things rightly, as Eric Butterworth says. When we have something in our lives that is upsetting to us, but we keep thinking about it, you know. I mean, what do you do if you have a toothache? What are you thinking about? If we don't try to do something to the contrary, we're going to think about the toothache. So a way, other than calling the dentist, which is also in order, a way to do this is to take our attention off the problem and put our attention on God. And this is the Golden Key. Now, when I first read this, it was a little hard for me to comprehend, because I said, I don't really know how to think about God. That's just such a massive undertaking. Think about God. If God is not the old man up there, and I don't want to think about that, then what do I think about? So I came to understand one, such as the 12 powers of man, which Charles Fillmore delineated. Strength, love, joy, peace. These are aspects of God that are aspects of us. And that is one way to think about God. Think about any aspect of God that appeals to you. Whatever represents God to you, put your attention on that instead of the problem. And it's a way of meditating. It's a way of changing our thoughts, of paying attention to our thoughts. So it's using the other principles. It's using affirmative prayer. And it's using the principle that everything is God, the oneness. It's using the principle that there is a spark of divinity within me and that I'm paying attention to it and listening to it. It's using the principle that my thoughts create my reality, because I'm directing my thoughts to think about an aspect of God. And in so doing, I'm getting my mind off the problem. Well, we're told that the problem can't be solved at its own level anyway. We need to go to a different level to seek the solution. So thinking about God, whatever God means to us, is moving to a different level. It is moving to a different level in consciousness. And it's all about our consciousness. Each of us as individuals and groups, this church, we have a consciousness. And if we know that and we try to work together to apply the principles, that will change our whole experience as a group, not just each of us individually, but as a group. And we attract what we need if our consciousness is at a higher level and we are expressing these principles, then if we need a minister, we don't know if we do at this point, but if we do, then we will attract one who is at the level, the right level that we want to be at, not attracting someone through our fears and insecurities and a sense of lack, but through the level that we want to move to. And that is the greatest thing a minister can do for a church, is to facilitate the raising of consciousness. Everything else comes from that. If our consciousness is raised, we have prosperity consciousness, then we aren't worrying about paying the bills. Our consciousness is there, and we do the action. We practice the principles. We do what we need to, but we have the prosperity consciousness. So our next minister, keep that in mind. That person's job is to facilitate the raising of consciousness of everyone here, individually and as a group. We're responsible for our own, but still, teachers, ministers, others help us, just as authors help us, chaplains help us. You know, we all can use all the help that we can get, even though ultimately we are responsible for our own consciousness. And when we know that, then we become really responsible. Before you know it, you could pretend or shirk it off. But when you know that, it is important that we look at our thoughts, that we look at our actions. And sometimes I don't like to do that, I tell you. But when I think of the past, it's harder for me. Oh, my gosh. But when I think of the future and I think, oh, I have this is a tool. I can think about this as a tool to change whatever I need to be changing. And that's a very empowering, wonderful, positive thing. So beating myself up for the past is not helpful, but saying I have tools to change my future starting now. I use it in the present, but it will affect the next present, the next now, the next moment for all of us. So, back to the golden key, we've been thinking about God, we've been meditating, thinking of the faces of God, the aspects of God, and then we let it go. And whenever we want to go back to the old wound or the problem, then we do the same thing we're taught in meditation. When we're in the silence and we have a thought come by, don't recoil or act like it was a hot fire. Just gently notice it and let it go. And go back to the mantra or the breath, whatever is directing us in meditation. The same in using the golden key. When we go back to think about the problem, just let it go. Like a popping a bubble, maybe. Let it go and know that it's in divine order. It's in divine hands. But we don't solve it at the level of the problem. So go back to whatever represents God or good or God, good orderly direction, divine order to us. Go back to that thought gently and let the other one go. And then things work out. Don't they usually work out most of the time? I mean, there's some real crises in life, definitely. But when those occur, if we're practicing these principles, if we know how to use affirmative prayer, if we know the tool of the golden key, if we know that we're responsible for our thoughts and our beliefs and that we're able to change them, if we know all those things, then we act different. We respond differently to the crises. We're not victims. If we don't know those things, it's pretty easy sometimes to be a victim. But if we do and we're practicing, we're not victims. We live our lives differently, and we have the support of others as well. Spiritual, seen and unseen resources that allow us to live a different kind of life. And all of these things are, that's the beauty of metaphysics. That's the beauty of new thought. That's the beauty of unity, that we are learning to expand in consciousness and in our experiences and be open and heart-centered, expressing more love, releasing more fear. And that's what we do when we practice the principles. In closing, I want to, I want to share with you something that was originally written by Eric Butterworth, one of my favorite Unity teachers. And it's a blessing. May you always remember there is only one power and one presence in your life, God the Good, with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. May you always remember God is creating you in God's image and likeness in each and every present moment. May you always remember you are a magnificent point of power. May you always remember all that God is expressing at the point of you. May you always have the clarity, enthusiasm, and determination to demonstrate these truths every day. All of divine mind is expressing at the point of you. And so it is. Namaste.